And Amelia, thank you for the stewardship campaign. It is not an easy task, so bless you many times over. And Joshua, thank you. And Emily, thank you for being here with us today, for your beautiful music. And to AV, I can always have to say thank you to Bill and AV, because that's essential. And to all of you for being here today. And yes, this morning is Stewardship Sunday. We're supposed, or at least the minister is supposed, to talk about the need to keep the bills paid, the staff happy, and the buildings maintained. I have a Christian colleague who told me a few months ago that for them, the stewardship sermon is like Easter. How do we make it new and interesting every year? This is my 15th congregation in 27 years of interim and contract ministry. My colleagues and I try to make a stewardship sermon interesting and maybe even a smidgen funny. Sermon titles like Sermon on the Amount pop up at pledge time. Others include straightforward humor like, I upped my pledge, up yours. But this morning I'm not going to talk about money except very briefly at the end. I'm going to suggest other reasons why this church community is a lot more than paying the bills, supporting staff. Especially now. And I'm going to use the opening words and the reading as the themes. I mentioned Susan Beaumont as a famous teacher and church consultant. When I took my class with her last summer on leading in a liminal season, it was clear to many of us in the room, Lutheran ministers, Unitarian Universalist ministers, Baptist ministers, that her words resonated very deeply. During liminal seasons, we occupy space on both sides of a boundary. So imagine you're crossing a doorway in a room, or crossing, moving out of a doorway into the outside when it's colder and on the inside it's warm. How does that feel when you're crossing that threshold? We have one foot rooted in something that is not yet over, while the other foot is planted in something not yet defined, something not yet ready to begin. My partner Deborah in Oregon said, oh, that reminds me of giving birth to my two children. That also is a threshold. So what does liminality mean? I said it's crossing a threshold. And during that moment of crossing the threshold, we are not in balance. We are between here and there, neither here nor there. We're right in between. So here's a way of looking at liminality. Let's do some time travel. Imagine 10 years ago, October 2009. President Obama was in his first year as president. There was some hope, especially among white Americans, that racism was in the past. Black and brown people knew better. The so-called Great Recession was softening. Some jobs were coming back. People were saving money and paying down bills. People surveyed around the country had tentative hope that maybe an extended period of stability and economic security and more jobs and less international tension would be coming in the future. And yes, climate scientists warned about global climate change, but that was still pretty fringe. Here at church, Kate Walker was full-time minister here in what turned out to be almost her last year. She left in 2010. And I talked to her recently, and she wanted me to say hello to everybody. So things seemed stable. Maybe in America it was a little bumpy, but there was hope on the horizon. Fast forward to today, October 6th, 2019. The reasonable certainties of 2009 are gone. The deeply painful American conversation about racism is taking center stage in much of America, including our Unitarian Universalist community. Marriage equality is now the law of the land, but still endangered by those who would prefer to take us back to the good old days. The trans community is also in danger of violence and discrimination. Those in the LGBTQIA+ gender spectrum remind us that everyone deserves a place at the table of America. We have no idea what next year will bring. If you were to look, imagine the day after the 2020 election, do you know what the results will be? I don't. But at the same time, there's a new generation of activists who are making their voices and their feet and their intention aloud. Many of them girls and women from all over the world who are holding our feet to the fire of climate awareness and a climate crisis that is now upon us. And yes, we have fearful murmurs of nuclear war. For the first time since the Soviet Union disappeared almost 30 years ago. And I thought to myself, what is going on? And the clock, the doomsday clock, is now at 2 minutes to midnight, which is the closest it's been to the potential of nuclear war in many years. Many coming out of college will likely have huge student loan debt and no guarantees of a job or economic security. People have come to me in the last year or so here and in West Seattle where I was, asking questions like, should I have children in a time like this? What will they inherit? Is there a job waiting for me after school? Can I retire and not be poverty-stricken? Does church really matter in these days? And that's what a liminal season, I think, is all about. An old era that many of us grew up in after World War II is coming to an end. And we are crossing a threshold, every one of us, into a new and unknown and very fearful age. And none of us are immune to its challenges and dangers. So when we walk through these doors on a Sunday, I think at our best we hope to cross the threshold into a place that will help us answer or explore questions like those above. Can I retire? Can I have children? Is the world going to be a safer place? We want to be more than just another church in Meadville. And this is where I want to return to Marge Piercy's poem. It was first published in 1980. A couple of years ago, in 2017, I got to wondering if she would have changed that poem had it been written today in a digital era with the internet and devices and so on that she wouldn't have imagined back in 1980. So I was actually able to get her email address off of her website. And she lives on Cape Cod, by the way. I emailed her to ask, thinking, well, I probably won't get a response. But she responded 2 hours later. And she said, first of all, I want you to use the revised version of The Low Road from The Hunger Moon from 2011, because I made some important changes. And I said, okay, that works for me. In the original poem from 1980, she had written about traditional ways of forming community and resistance to tyranny. And if you remember that first stanza, alone, and they can roll over you. Alone, there's almost no chance. And she had removed the stanza right after that first stanza, which said, "But two people fighting back to back can cut through a mob. A snake dancing file can break through a column. An army can meet an army." Now, we didn't have time on our email conversation for me to ask her, "Why did you remove those lines?" Because there was a storm coming through on the East Coast, and she said she didn't have much battery power left to be able to do email. So I didn't have a chance to ask her, but for one thing, they broke the continuity of the poem a bit. And for the second thing, I wonder if she was disturbed by it was violence facing violence. Because right after that, she starts, as Peggy wrote, read, "Two people can keep each other sane. Six people can eat pie with no seconds," and so on. And of course, it's talking about community. She told me in the last email she sent me that the final stanza was still the most important part of that poem, and she hoped that I would focus on it in whatever ways I used it in the future. She did make two important changes in it. I'm going to read the last stanza again. "It goes one at a time. It starts when you care to act. It starts when you do it again after they say no. It starts when you say we and know who you mean. And each day you mean one more." Here are the differences. The word no, it starts when you say it, do it again after they say no, is capitalized. The word we is also capitalized. And those small changes give voice to forming community and not accepting no as the answer by those who are powerful. No is our voice to those in power who believe that people should pull themselves up by their bootstraps even if they have no boots. No is our voice to the separation of children from their parents at the southern border, because families belong together. And we aren't just another church community in Northwest Pennsylvania. The stewardship campaign isn't just about the building or the staff or the RE program. Because all of us in one way or another are called to be teachers and students here. Here's an example. I'll be teaching two classes this winter and spring. One will be on the historical Jesus called Jesus Reconsidered, based on a book by one of my old teachers, Marcus Borg. And the other class will be a spiritual practice class about mindful eating. How do we eat more healthy foods, but also take pleasure in them and slow down our eating? What else can we learn together? Well, what about celebrations? Because if a church isn't having fun once in a while, I think it's not a very happy place. And I believe in having fun. So I mentioned last Sunday, wouldn't it be nice if we could make this room, this building, the sanctuary, into a place for the whole community to enjoy? And what I said last Sunday is that we host a city or county benefit concert this spring. And I have no idea what it would be, but I bet you know. Imagine an audience that would be sitting here with a full house enjoying performers playing bluegrass or jazz or classical or rock or other music to help the community beyond these walls. It's time. We are all of us in that liminal season of a great turning in America and the world. We no longer have the luxury to wait until some distant year in the future when it will be easier to do. If you or those you love are struggling with addictions, this is the time when we can support you in meaningful ways. If you are brown or black-skinned, this is the time we white people must take responsibility to untangle centuries of racial bias. If you are gay or lesbian or trans or anywhere on a spectrum of gender identity, this is it. There's no giving up. There's no turning around. If you're a young adult trying to find your way through a world that makes very little sense, this is it. And we can learn together, if it's possible, to be spiritual and maybe even a bit religious. And these, to me, are reasons why this church is just more than just another church in Meadville. We know we can do it. We can change with the times. We can answer the call to love. This is it. No more waiting. This is the time we've waited for to make a real difference in this little corner of the world. Our choices are clear. It's up to every one of us how we choose. I said at the end that I would say just a little tiny bit about money. Just a tiny bit. Amelia, could you come up for a moment, please? This is my pledge. It isn't very much, I'm afraid, because my income's gone down for some reason. I'm on Social Security, too. But I believe in this congregation. Can I afford it? I don't know, but I'm going to do the damnedest I can to make sure to help you, because helping you is helping us all. Thank you very much.
We are honored. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like us to take just a few moments of quiet. What does it mean to be in community? What's it mean to have a place where you can go when you don't have family around, or you're going through a crisis, or just the world doesn't make much sense? This is what religious community should be about. Not just the stewardship of money, but the stewardship of you, your children, your grandchildren, your friends, and the generations that wait to see if we're going to do our part to help make the world a sane place. Without us, who is there?